As I say, I've been studying this passage part of yesterday and then today, and I personally came out of this study hugely encouraged and thrilled. And I trust and pray that as we study this passage, you also will be greatly encouraged and thrilled. I just praise and bless the God of heaven for a passage like this, and what wonderful blessings there are for us in it. Let me begin by asking you a question. How does God deal with you when you have passed through a particularly difficult time in your life, sometimes when that difficulty has been your own making? Okay? How does God minister to you? You've been through a particularly difficult time, perhaps a time of illness, perhaps a time of great temptation, perhaps a time of great attack from the devil, when you've been attacked with discouragement and you've been in a very dry place in your Christian life, your prayer life has dried up, your Bible reading has dried up, you've just found the devil has attacked you with discouragement, or perhaps a time at work when it has been very, very stressful, very difficult, a lot of pressure has come upon you, and you just feel under a lot of stress and a lot of pressure. How does God minister to you? The reason I ask that question is because this was Jacob's condition in chapter 35. You remember, we looked at chapter 34 last week, and in many ways, chapter 34 was a low point in Jacob's life. Now, you know that Jacob went through periods in his life when he was at a high point, and he went through periods in his life when he was at a low point. But I would say that up to this point in Jacob's life, this had to be, chapter 34, had to be the lowest point in his life. Well, he's got this daughter. And as we saw last week, it's rather a dreadful passage, but his daughter was raped. And you remember we looked at those three verbs that are used in chapter 34 and verse 2. And it says there, and when Shechem, the son of Hamor the Hivite, the prince of Israel, saw her, and then the three verbs there, he seized her, he lay with her, and he humiliated her. So this dreadful incident has happened, and as I was explaining last week, it's highly likely she was a young teenager at this time, 14, maybe 15. She wasn't older than that. And this dreadful man, he seizes her. That's a horrible Hebrew word. It's a word that's used when you capture somebody and enslave them against their will. He seized her. And he lay with her. He violated her. And then it says, and he humiliated her. So this was more, I mean, there's no such thing as an ordinary rape. All rape is horrible. But this was more than rape. This was something more. I don't know what he did, but he obviously did something additional to her. He horribly humiliated her. And this is his daughter. And, you know, people often say, well, of course, in those times, daughters didn't matter very much and so on. I don't believe a word of that. To every father, his daughter is precious. It doesn't matter which time of the in human history you lived. It doesn't matter which part of the world you live in. You know, I've lived in India, I've lived in Africa. Daughters are precious to their fathers. Of course they are. They're your children. And I think they're especially precious because daughters are vulnerable. At least a son can look after himself if he's attacked. A daughter is vulnerable. And there's no reason to believe that he didn't care. It must have hurt Jacob really, really deeply. So he has passed through the worst crisis in his life up to this point. Later, of course, when Joseph goes missing, he goes through another crisis. I don't believe that crisis was deeper than this one. I think it was as deep, but I don't think it was deeper. So he has that crisis. And then, as we saw last week, his sons take the whole matter into their hands. And they say to the men of Shechem, you must all get circumcised so that we can then give you our daughters and take your daughters. And so all the men go and get circumcised. And then the sons of Jacob go and attack, and they kill all the Shechemite men. Now, it's quite obvious when you look at verse 5 of chapter 35 that they were surrounded by other tribes around them. It says, and as they journeyed, a terror from God fell upon the cities that were around them, so that they did not pursue the sons of Jacob. So they weren't living in isolation, just the two groups, with nobody around them. The way that this is pictured, you have Jacob has settled here, and Shechem is his near neighbor, but there are other cities very nearby. And here, the sons of Jacob have killed all the men of Shechem. Well, all the other cities are going to say, we've got to declare war on these people. They're strangers among us. They haven't been there very long. You know, they've just moved in recently. And they've done this. They've killed all the men of Shechem. If we don't kill them, they will kill us. They're obviously warlike people. So, this is why, at the end of chapter 34, Jacob is so worried. He says right at the end of chapter 34, verse 30, Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, you have brought trouble on me by making me stink to the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites and the Perizzites. My numbers are few. Now, many years later, there were 70. So at this time, there probably were much fewer than that. I mean, when he moved to Egypt, and that was decades later, there were 70, you see. So by this time, of course, there were fewer than that. He says, my numbers are few. And if they gather themselves against me and attack me, I shall be destroyed, both I and my household. So Jacob, just to set chapter 35 in its context, Jacob has passed through the lowest point in his life. Now, we noticed last week, I asked you this question, what do you notice about chapter 34? What peculiarity do you notice? And you rightly answered, the name of God is not mentioned anywhere in chapter 34. Once you come to chapter 35, God's name is everywhere. It's wonderful. It's like passing through a wilderness and coming to a vast oasis of palm trees and sweet waters. The name of God is everywhere. And what makes these first 15 verses of chapter 35 so beautiful and so precious is how tenderly and how with compassion and mercy and understanding God ministers to his troubled child. That's the theme of chapter 35. Chapter 35, God comes to Jacob, and God tenderly and graciously, compassionately ministers to this troubled man. This is the beauty of this passage. Well, let's look at what God does. And I believe this is a pattern of how God ministers to us when we are in a low point. I hope you draw encouragement from this. I want us to see three things that God does. Notice in the first place, God speaks to Jacob. God speaks to Jacob. Verse 1, God said to Jacob, arise, go up to Bethel and dwell there. Isn't it wonderful that God doesn't have a go at him? We noticed last week in chapter 34, it is possible, I'm not going to say it is definite, it is possible that this difficulty was partly his own making. When we looked at that passage, we noticed that he settled near Shechem. Whereas earlier, when Abraham had come into this land, he had passed by Shechem, but hadn't settled at Shechem. He had gone on to Bethel and settled in Bethel. This is in Genesis 12. It's the same journey. He had come from Haran, and he had come to Shechem and had moved on. Moses makes that point in Genesis 12. Abraham moved on. And Abraham probably saw all these cities. And Abraham thought, I don't want to settle among these people. There could be problems between us. There could be difficulties between us. I don't want to settle where there is all these cities here. I want to go a place where there's more remote, and I want to settle there. Well, his grandson Jacob undertakes the same journey from Haran, comes to Bethel and settles there. And as I pointed out, the language is reminiscent of Lot settling near Sodom and Gomorrah. And you know, he had problems then. Of course, Lot was Jacob's uncle. But Jacob settled near Shechem. And I just made the point, I don't want to be dogmatic about it. It is possible that he brought this upon himself. Possibly he should have followed his grandfather's example when he came from Haran and gone on to Bethel. But he settled near these people. So it is possible the problem was partly his own making. Whether it was or not, the fact is he was very, very low, very discouraged, very depressed, because his daughter has been raped and his sons have killed all the men and these cities have turned against him. Well, he's in trouble. And God comes and God speaks to him. And God doesn't say to him, why on earth did you settle here, you fool? God doesn't say to him, what on earth is this that you have done? Why didn't you control your sons? Why did you allow your sons to go and kill all these men? God doesn't do that. This is a very gracious word. It's a very tender word. And God says, arise, go up to Bethel and dwell there. Make an altar there to the God who appeared to you when you fled from your brother Esau. This is the first time in the Bible anybody has been instructed to make an altar. It's interesting. I didn't know that. I found this in a commentary, and the writer said Abraham had never been instructed to make. Abraham did make an altar, but not under direct instruction from God. And Isaac had never been instructed. But Jacob, God says to him, come and worship me. You know, bring your worship. Let's enter into fellowship here, Jacob, because worship is fellowship with God. It's intimacy with God. And God is inviting Jacob into an intimate relationship with him. It's rather like father coming to a son who has been bullied at school or has done badly in his exams or something and is feeling really bad and depressed. The father gathers up his son and gives him a cuddle and says, I love you. I know you're going through a very difficult time, but I'm here for you. And that's a lovely first thing that God does. God speaks. Well, friends, let's always be encouraged in this. You're going through a dry time. You're going through a difficult time. Turn to the scriptures and God will speak to you. Don't neglect the meeting of God's people. Because the word of God is being proclaimed. The word of God is being studied. And the devil will always say, you know, you're rubbish as a Christian. You're so dry. Why bother going to the prayer meeting? You're not going to pray anyway. You feel so low. Well, we're going to study the word. Come to the prayer meeting. Can I say this? Every time I prepare a message, I always actually write down on the piece of paper when I'm making my notes, make your message encouraging. I say that to myself. Make your message encouraging. It's easy to discourage God's people. There's nothing clever in that. It's easy to have a go at God's people and rant at God's people and shout at God. Nothing clever in that. But I say to myself, encourage. Because God encourages. So encourage. So if you're feeling low, I'm not just saying this because I'm leading the Bible study, but I just say this. Come to the Bible study. I try to make every message an encouraging one. So the first thing God does is that he speaks to him. The second thing that God does is that he protects him from attack. Verse 5. And so they journeyed. Sorry, as they journeyed, a terror from God fell upon the cities that were around them so that they did not pursue the sons of Jacob. So clearly they had planned to do this. Well, you can understand this, you know. This group have come from somewhere, Haran, and he has settled in our midst. Well, all right, he's settled there. But then they kill all the men of the Shechemite. Hey, if we don't deal with them, they will kill all our men. So there's no question these cities would have planned a revenge. But God supernaturally sends a terror upon them. Now, what that means, we don't know. Obviously, some kind of fear upon them. You do not touch these people. These are my people. You do not touch them. And the men of these cities do nothing. And Jacob and his company move on. They move away and they go to Bethel. You feel under attack from Satan. You feel dry. You feel low. Well, Satan, if God doesn't protect you, Satan will keep attacking you. Satan has no mercy. You know, Satan doesn't play by the rules. You know, we often say you don't kick a man when he's down. Well, Satan kicks a man when he's down. Satan has absolutely no mercy. He's out to destroy you. But you must always remember this. God wonderfully protects his people. And we don't know the half of it. You don't know what God has protected you from today. You don't know. You know, you don't know in the last week what Satan had planned and what he had planned his people to do, what your neighbors, what your relatives were going to do, and what Satan had planned, how he had planned to attack you, and God has protected you. We just do not know. We don't know the half of it, you see. But here is teaching that God, when his people are down, God will supernaturally protect them. Take great encouragement from that. And then the third thing I want us to notice in this is that God reminds Jacob of his faithfulness. They come to Bethel, and look in verse 9, God appeared to Jacob again. There is this pattern in Jacob's life. When he's setting out from somewhere, God appears to him. And when he reaches his destination, God appears to him. So when he had cheated his brother of the birthright, when he had deceived his father, when he's setting out, God appeared to him at Luz. When he arrived in Haran, his testimony was, God has been with me. When he's setting out from Haran, God appeared to him. When he came here, God again appeared to him. He's setting out, God appears to him. He arrives in Bethel, God appears to him. And it's just that little indication, God is always with his people. God has never left him. And it was, of course, that promise, the first time when he left his home after cheating his brother of the birthright and deceiving his father. When he set out, God appeared to him in that dream. And God said to him, I will be with you. So God appears to him. Now, you remember when he came back to Shechem, God appeared to him and he wrestled with Jacob. You remember that passage we looked at in chapter 32, when God wrestled with him. And you remember that is when God changed his name from Jacob to Israel. Well, here it says, God appeared to Jacob again when he came from Paddan Aram and blessed him. And God said to him, your name is Jacob. No longer shall you be called Jacob, but Israel shall be your name. Linda, you're looking puzzled.
Yeah, so is this like twice now?
Yeah. This is a second time that he appears to him and says, your name is no longer Jacob, but Israel. It's not just the same incident repeated here. This is God appearing to him again. Yeah. So God blesses him and God reminds him, I am your God and you are my child. And I've changed your name from Jacob, deceiver, to Israel.
Why do you think you've done it twice?
Well, I think it's a reminder to Jacob. I think Jacob was very, very low. And I think, you know, when people are low, I think they need a lot of tender, loving care. They need a lot of attention and ministry. And I think God knew that. And that's why I think God has again and again appeared to him and blessed him and spoken to him. I think he was at his lowest. And you can imagine that, you know, when his daughter is raped. I mean, at the end of 34, he must have been absolutely rock bottom. And I think God knew that. And I think that's why God ministered to him again. So I hope that encourages us, because we go through low periods. Well, you know, here is encouragement that God speaks to us, and God protects us, and God reminds us of his faithfulness, and God blesses us. So, you know, go to God when you are low and seek him for encouragement and blessing in his word.